Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Atlanta Startup Podcast. Sebastian Bouyes found inspiration for building his startup from his mother's experiences as a small business owner, where she often dealt with customer churn. Now he's built Arkham, which is leveraging AI to help clients strengthen merchant relationships with their already existing data. We'll dive into why he's initially targeting payment processors and merchant acquirers. Then we'll transition a conversation to the monthly founder meetups that he hosts at Atlanta Tech Village and why building a community in a blossoming startup hub like Atlanta is so critical to the city's growth. Sebastian, welcome to the podcast, man.
Hey, Will. Thanks for having me, my man.
Awesome. I'm excited for this dialogue and to learn more about your background and what you're working on at Arkham. So I think you should definitely just kick it off and tell us more about Arkham, and then, you know, we can dive into the Sebastian story a bit.
Absolutely. So Arkham is trying to change the way that customer relationships are managed. You know, for the most part, we can know that, you know, companies have the retention departments for the most part, and these departments tend to be very reactive. What I mean by that is normally approaching clients once the client has called to cancel or to leave, or sometimes you may come across a situation where the company makes it impossible for you to unsubscribe or to cancel your subscription. And these are all forms of retention. You know, they just simply happen to be reactive retention strategies, what we call them internally. And what we try to provide is an alternative to that for companies to proactively engage their customers, know exactly who will be leaving, why they will be leaving, so they can ultimately fix or mitigate those problems that arose in the beginning to damage that relationship between customer and company. So at that point, you know, building or rebuilding a relationship that was initially damaged as a result of a bad experience.
That's fascinating. So you're working, you know, at the point of merchant relationships and trying to enhance retention for customers in this segment. And we're going to dive into more of who is your ideal customer in a few seconds, but I want to give our audience some context on your background as a founder, as a person, as an entrepreneur. You know, what's your story and what ultimately led you to do the crazy thing and build a startup?
Yeah, you got to be a little bit of a psychopath to start a company specifically. But man, you know, journey takes me back to, you know, since I was a little kid. I actually, you know, was born in Miami. Mom moved back to Colombia very early on. And that's not, you know, that's Colombia, South America, by the way. So moved very early on, and I lived there until I was about 11. Obviously, you know, growing up in Colombia is tough. Seeing my mom pretty much have the same job for over 25 years. And her job was actually, it's funny enough, in the relationship management space. So her job was to ensure that her customers were happy and they didn't leave. And, you know, I very vividly remember some days where she would be in a bad mood and I would ask what's going on. And, you know, big company just left and she couldn't do anything about it. Little did I know that, you know, almost 15 years later, I would be kind of hammering on head on this particular problem, and which I actually found extremely fascinating. So shortly after grad school, I'm actually get a job at a consulting firm where, you know, we're working with 80 to 90% of the newspapers across the US and helping them, you know, mitigate subscriber churn. It's one of the things that we're doing. And I always thought it was a very interesting thing that we could actually predict when customers, or specifically in the newspaper space, subscribers were going to be switching or leaving their companies or their newspapers. And this was all leveraging data at the time. So this is almost 6 years back. And I always kind of, you know, people always like to make fun of the newspaper industry. It's like dinosaurs. It's like, nah, man, these guys are 10 years ahead, even the payments industry, you know? So that's actually where I ended up going. I ended up working for one of the largest acquirers in the US or payments processors. And from there, I realized, you know, one of my jobs was, hey, here is a list of the customers that left. And the CEO always wanted to kind of throw a shoe at my face every time I give him that list over. And he said, man, there's nothing actionable about this. And that's when I actually, you know, based on my previous experience, I realized, hey, Actually, payments data is a lot better than newspapers data is ever would be. The quality of the information is very detailed. We have transactional level information about customers. In the case of payments processors, these are merchants, and we know exactly where they're located, how much they pay in credit card fees, and an array of different variables or fields that could be used for modeling specifically retention or churn patterns before they occurred. So that's kind of how, you know, Arkham was pretty much born from that point on.
Your mother, you know, worked in the world of business, and the churn that she saw in her customers ultimately led you years later to build this startup in Arkham. That's so fascinating.
It's one of those things that I, you know, it's kind of like Jobs says, you know, you can only connect the dots looking backwards.
Right.
And it was even like, you know, maybe like into a year and a half that I'm telling her what I'm doing. You know, parents never know what the hell their kids are doing. And she was like, so what are you doing? And I was like, you remember that time that you would come home bummed out because you lost a client? Right. Well, we're actually working to pretty much provide you, people like you, with better tools in order to mitigate this problem. So that was always, you know, it's kind of, you know, full circle or pretty fascinating that, you know, to think that something that was, you know, almost like,
right,
I took as given, you know, would come back to, I guess, haunt me was 15 right. years later.
I think a full circle moment is definitely how you would characterize the beginning of this idea. And so, you know, as you think about the customers that you're serving at Arkham, what's the ideal customer type that you all are really looking to help proactively strengthen relationships right now?
So our go-to customers are primarily, you know, payments processors, or what you call merchant acquirers. And these guys, in short, they have one job, and that is to get credit card processing inside businesses. So Atlanta actually happens to be the credit card processing hub of the U.S. You know, in fact, roughly around 70% of all payments or transactions come through Atlanta. The reason for that is, you know, the high concentration of large payments companies you see here. You have companies like Elavon, Global Payments, First Data was just, you know, at 400, and an array of these companies pretty much set up hub in here, you know. And because of that, I feel that, you know, in terms of specifically, you know, the type of portfolio we focus, we don't really look at much of, you know, e-commerce transactions, because at the end of the day, the majority of transactions today are still brick and mortar, what we call card present transactions, meaning that the customer is actually swiping a credit card in a particular terminal or POS. And these guys can have customers from, you know, 5,000 merchants all the way to, you know, 100,000 merchants. In the case of Chase Payment Tech, that is sort of the behemoth, or Chase Merchant Services, as it's called today, have over 1 million merchants. So you can imagine how hard it is to really have that one-on-one relationship with every single one of your customers when you have tens or of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of clients any given month that, A, have problems with, you know, encounter problems, whether their POS going out or not working in a particular day, call it a Saturday. Now you've probably seen that cash only sign at the door. These are all product problems, you know, that actually when you look at the data, specifically transactional level data, you're really able to know when these businesses had order gaps, for example, or when their product or POS machine was not working in a specific day or time or place, which really allows you to make very accurate predictions about these churn behaviors that occur roughly before they're actually will be, you know, end up leaving or switching to another processor.
Right. You know, you talk about payment processors and merchant acquirers being kind of your core customer right now. And like you said, you are in the perfect place in Atlanta. Most of the payments in the country are transacted here. They call Atlanta, I think, Transaction Alley.
Yeah, and, buddy.
Yeah. So there's so much opportunity here in this space. And I love your approach to thinking about the ideal customer and thinking about the industry today and how these relationships are managed. You know, what is kind of the current state of how these relationships are being maintained, managed? And, you know, why is this innovation truly needed in the space today?
Absolutely. So, and granted, I don't think this is only limited to payments. I just happen to come from, you know, payments background. My co-founder, Interesting enough, he was my old colleague when we were solving or mitigating churn for the newspaper industry. And we couldn't be more different. You know, he's actually very introvert, you know, very conservative. And on my first day, I remember, you know, him like, you want to grab some lunch? And I said, sure thing. And that was probably the most awkward lunch I ever had. It was like an hour of silence for the most part. And I'm just chewing on my food. It's like, oh man, what did I get myself into? But actually, interesting enough, you know, fast forward and I ended up going into payments. He ended up going into payments as well. And when I'm pitching this to him, he's almost like just sitting there nodding. And I'm like, dude, so like, tell me something. Like, do you see it? Or he's like, no, I actually work with payments companies right now. And this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So it was always kind of interesting to see that, you know, that, hey, this is, we've had a very unique experience up to this point to solve this particular problem. Right. And having worked with one of the largest payments processors in the industry, the way retention is managed is very simple. You know, you have a CRM, as most businesses do, but at the end of the day, you know, you're contacting merchants who, stop processing payments. In other words, you know, you see a couple of months of consecutive no transaction going on in these businesses, and that's when they go and call them. But again, by that point, the merchant's probably gone. He already went to another processor. And my favorite here is when the merchant is actually calling to cancel, and these payments companies want to give them discounts, want to give them perks, new tools, new POS machines. And again, too late. The merchant has made his decision to leave, and it's, you know, probably been in a situation where someone tries to change your mind after you decided something. And it's like, it's very hard in that particular point in time. But what if, you know, and this is always the question, what if we could identify a customer at risk of leaving before the customer even thought about it himself? In other words, before that decision to leave a business, subscription, a service was actually present. And what we came to find out is that, you know, as humans, we're creatures of habits. And whether we want to believe it or not, a lot of our habits are behaviors that we have subconsciously developed time over time. And it's because of that element that we're actually able to leverage data, run it through, you know, AI algorithm, and with a 90% accuracy, it can tell us whether someone will be leaving or staying, which is actually very powerful if you think about it, because, you know, computing power right now, it's very cheap. You know, we can get the fastest CPUs out of, you know, AWS, very cheap. You know, this is something that, you know, really wasn't possible even 10 years ago, you know, which is kind of the fascinating aspect of it. So it's like, you know, if you know who's going to leave and you know why they're going to leave, then you can actually work towards solving those problems before they get out of hand.
Right.
You know, which is sort of the, you know, the ultimate, you know, solution for every business. I want to know when my clients are leaving. I don't know why they're leaving, you know.
Right.
So that's sort of where, you know, we're changing the way, you know, retention is managed. And by no means do we plan to stay in the payments industry. You know, this is a methodology that we developed and refined over the last couple of years by pure experimentation. And I think that we arrived at a point where we can essentially, as long as there's recurring revenue or recurring data, we can pretty much apply this methodology to absolutely any industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with 90% accuracy, that is such a great baseline to make decisions off of as a corporation, you know, as a business owner. So that's incredibly fascinating. And like you said, payments is the space where you all are breaking into the market, creating this wedge, and that's a great area and segment of the market to break into. And thinking about, you know, 2022, we're in May now, thinking about the rest of the year, you know, what gets you excited relative to growth and new products around Arkham?
I think we're only scratching the surface, you know, up to, you know, for the first 2 years, we only work with call it aggregated data. That means is we saw a particular merchant over 1 month. As of recently, we were able to actually see transactional level data. And that is literally, you know, information by the minute, by the second of when that transaction occurred. And it was at that point where we realized that, hey, it's not so much about the tools that we're developing, but it's also the access to the information that we get to see. You know, being that, you know, a third of our GDP is consumption data. This is ultimately what we're seeing. Consumption patterns across industries, what industries are growing, which ones are slowing down, and how are consumer behaviors changing over time. So I think that to maybe use an analogy here, I kind of, or we want to ultimately build, you know, something like the Kayak of payments or the Palantir of payments. In other words, you know, a skin layer on top of all these infrastructure that is set up here in Atlanta and all this data that is pretty much just considered, you know, waste product for the most part, and really leverage it to not only provide better tools or solutions for payments companies, but also, you know, to consumers, to merchants. You know, imagine that, you know, a merchant can all of a sudden leverage his, you know, his payments processor to become their data analytics or their data science provider, something that they could never afford. If you're a mom and pop shop here in Pond City Market, all of a sudden you have access to a data science team that is at your disposal to help you make better business decisions. I think ultimately this is where, you know, we'll start heading down, where we'll use our clients and ultimately our partners at distribution channels to essentially provide analytics to absolutely every, you know, all the 15 million card accepting merchants that are out there in the US.
Right. That's the point I was going to get at next. It's kind of the trickle down effect that this is going to have on the consumer eventually. And so really love the approach here. And I want to transition the conversation a bit, right? You are from Miami, you lived in Columbia, and then you went to Florida State as well. And then you moved here to Atlanta, you worked at Evo, and now you're at, you know, this point of entrepreneurship in your life. And so you're known around the city as a community builder, right? You're hosting events at ATV. One, tell us more about the events at ATV. And then two, you know, taking that answer a bit broader, how important and why is it so important to have community events and a startup community, you know, in a city like Atlanta that is just burgeoning at the seams with startup activity?
First of all, Will, you gave me way too much credit. to be honest, you know, entrepreneurship is, man, probably one of the loneliest journeys and toughest journeys. And it's so hard. It's, you know, you really can go back to your old friends and tell them about where you're going through, because eventually they just get sick of hearing it, you know. Significant other, you know, you don't want to bother them with the problems that you're going through. And at the end of the day, it's pretty unfair to do that as well, because it's, you know, it's troubles and challenges and obstacles that only you as a founder can go through, and other founders as well. And this is sort of where, you know, I realized, A, I don't have any founders friends, and B, I've been living in Atlanta for the past, you know, 4 years, and you know, all the deep connections that I made essentially moved out of here. So I started working here out of ATV, surrounded by founders. And I realized, you know what, there is really no forum for all of us to get together, talk, discuss our problems, discuss what we've been doing or share our experiences. And this is kind of where, you know, maybe back in December, we decided to host the first founders meetup here in the roof. And actually, it was only myself and six other founders. You know, but it was so intimate, it was so raw, and it was so, you know, vulnerable. You know, every single person in there was not trying to put a facade in. It was themselves, their startups, and what they were going through, both the difficulties and the wins. And shortly after, you know, we did this very low key. And, you know, by, you know, a couple months later, we literally had, you know, 40, 50 founders. We're doing a crowdfunding through WeFunder. So they were actually, you know, we got them to sponsor the drinks and the food. So it was like, really, you know, you want to get founders together, free food and free drinks, you know? And that was one way to really facilitate, you know, a lot of the space. And at the same time, the conversations that emerged from there, the relationships. And at the end of the day, it made the journey, you know, when you're building it alongside, you know, we'll call it, you know, other soldiers in you know, with a similar mission. Everybody, right. Every founder you talk to, they want to change the world. And, you know, there is founders from, you know, finish racing their Series A all the way to the inception. And the spillover of knowledge that occurs from having just a group of individuals, same sort of mindset together in the same room, it's very powerful. And that's kind of what, you know, we seem to have hitched that. You know, in Atlanta, we have a big startup scene, but it's also very siloed and segregated. You're from ATDC, you only see ATDC founders. You're from ATV, you only see ATV founders. You work at Techstars out of Ponce, you only see Techstars founders. So there was really no way or no platform that brought every single founder across the city together. And that's what we hope to create as well.
Yeah, I love the mission and the vision, right? You mentioned the knowledge transfer that happens from the spectrum of founders, like you said, from, you know, Series A, Series B, all the way down to idea stage. There's something that can be extracted for everyone in these meetups and these conversations. So how often are they happening, and what's the best way for, you know, a founder who's listening right now to attend one of the meetups?
Honestly, we try to do these once a month. I realize that it's actually kind of like a full-time job too, getting ready for these things. So we try to limit them to once a month just to, you know, make sure that we have a consistent cadence around meeting up, but B, you know, to ensure that, hey, a month is a long time to, you know, come across new challenges or new solutions. And hopefully that's enough time to essentially have a lesson to learn and where you can ultimately share with others. Cause that's the whole idea. You know, it's, I think the most valuable lessons I learned through my journey didn't come from professors. It didn't come from, you know, even business leaders. It came from founders and entrepreneurs who have been there in the trenches. You know, I kind of remember getting started and not even knowing what, you know, a convertible note was, or a cap table, or a valuation cap, or a discount on a valuation cap. And these terms seem so abstract and so obscure. But only after talking to founders enough times while they were raising did I realize that, oh man, this is actually not that hard. So, you know, anyone who wants to join us specifically here in Atlanta, hit me up on Twitter, Sebs Builes, that's B-U-I-L-E-S. But yeah, man, I'm pretty, you know, pretty much around ATV most of the time. Yeah. So popping in, we usually, again, it's very, you know, we send, when people make fun, it's like we send the bat signal over, you know, and people just kind of show up. Right. But it's very, you know, we're trying to formalize it a bit more so that we can, you know, ensure that, you know, if founders want to come, I don't care where you are, you know, you can always join us and be part of the conversation.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, Sebastian, I'm sure as these founder meetups have happened and you've, you know, shared experiences with other founders, you've had some opportunity to reflect on your journey as a founder thus far. And I'm curious to get, you know, your thoughts and insights on what is for you, what has been the most challenging and also the most rewarding part of building a startup thus far?
Most challenging, Will? Everything, man. Everything about this thing is hard from like, and I think that's what makes it fascinating too. You know, it's, you become versed in investments. You become versed in building a team, recruiting, biz dev, even developing, you know, software development. I'm more of, you know, data analyst, data scientist myself. And I never really coded software before. But after you talk to enough software engineers, you start seeing, okay, these are the tools. This is the framework. This is how you build a startup or a product from a software development perspective. And then you speak to attorneys, you know, learn about corporate bylaws and why do VCs prefer a Delaware C Corp versus a Georgia LLC? And these are things that, man, in no job will you ever learn all of this, you know, what I call, you know, business school knowledge distilled into, you know, couple of years or a couple of months or whatever it may be. And at the same time, you know, and probably this is my favorite thing about being a founder is just how open the community is to A, help you out, and how much you're forced to just talk to people. You know, it's like, I don't think we would have met had I not been a founder, because, you know, another founder buddy said, hey, dude, Will is in Atlanta. Cool dude. You should connect with him. And from there, it's like, okay, yeah, definitely. And from there, you know, so many relationships that I built, you know, I'm 30 years old. And sometimes you think, it's like, oh, I can't make new friends at this age. The friends that I made are my friends for life. And it's like, that's so not true, man. Yeah. Some people that you meet, it's like, it's almost like you're destined to meet, and you make this connection that all of a sudden you realize, hey, you know, I called to ask you a question. Now we're friends. And all of a sudden it's, you know, we're sort of on this life mission together and sharing different experiences. And I think that's what makes this journey so unique that, you know, in the position that you're in, you're almost forced to build relationships. And, you know, I think that's kind of what our entire business is about, you know, strengthening and rebuilding relationships that at one point were damaged because of a bad experience. Mm-hmm. Well, this is, you know, slightly different in the sense that we're not rebuilding, but actually building from the ground up in terms of, you know, meeting new people, and you never know where these relationships will take you.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. This entire industry and ecosystem is built on building relationships. And that's one of the most important things to do. And it's easy to do, but, you know, as an introvert myself, it's not hard to build relationships with great people here in Atlanta. I can tell you that everybody here is so welcoming, from the founders to the ecosystem players to the investors. So I love, you know, what's happening here in the city and how you're contributing to bring more cohesion to the founder relationships and equally the investor relationships as well. So this was certainly a fantastic conversation, Sebastian. And, you know, a payment processor who may be listening right now to the conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you regarding, you know, the services and software at Arkham?
Absolutely. So just shoot us an email at sebastian@arkhampartners.com. That's arcumpartners.com. Pretty active on Twitter sometimes, occasionally. And that's probably, you know, LinkedIn as well. So it's really, you know, I think I'm pretty accessible, I like to think, you know, and for the most part, you know, if you can't find me online, pop into ATV, you know, we're usually here. And it's kind of, you know, it's sort of funny, you know, at this point, you know, I was very skeptical about, you know, the community in here and coming even to ATV. And man, I couldn't kind of be, you know, sort of happier that this is sort of the place where I stumble upon, because kind of like you say, by the way, I would have never thought that you were an introvert. but it's, you know, it's the fact that, you know, everyone is just so open to helping, you know, and I think that's what's most fascinating about, you know, building in Atlanta is, you know, it's a mecca for minorities. We have some of the biggest businesses and concentration of Fortune 500 companies in here. Yep. And I think that's what I'm really, you know, and a lot of scrappy startups too that are working with these Fortune 500 companies, which are going to make this, you know, a very unique place in contrast as anywhere else. So, you know, I'm going to be happier to kind of set roots out here. So I'm going to be sticking around for a long time. So, you know, anything I can help out for the community, make sure that we can build better, I'm here for that.
Good. I love it, man. Sebastian, this was a great conversation. Thanks for joining me, and looking forward to seeing you around Atlanta sometime soon again, man.
Hey, absolutely will. Thank you so much for having me, man. Had a great time.
We're thrilled to have you as an Atlanta Startup Podcast listener. To help you get the most out of the experience, let me invite you to 3 insider opportunities from our host, Valor Ventures. First, want to be a guest on this amazing show? Reach out to our booking team at atlantastartuppodcast.com. Click on booking. It's a no-brainer from there. Are you raising a seed round? Valor definitely wants to hear from you. Share your startup story at valor.vc/pitch. Are you a woman or minority-led startup? Valor's sister program, the Startup Runway Foundation, gives away grants to promising startups led by underrepresented founders. The mission of the Startup Runway Foundation is connecting underrepresented founders to their first investors. Startup Runway finalists have raised over $40 million. See if you qualify for one of these amazing grants at startuprunway.org. You can also sign up for our next showcase for free there. Let me let you go today with a shout out to Startup Runway presenting sponsor, Cox Enterprises, and to our founding partners, American Family Institute, Truist, Georgia Power, Avanta Ventures, and Innovators Legal. These great organizations make Startup Runway possible. Thanks for listening today, and see you back next week.